Hey Rob, how are you, brother? You okay?
Yeah, we did. How are you, man?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you, mate. Doing your cardio again?
Yeah, it's I steal this opportunity to I normally train sort of 5 a.m. So I use the Thursdays morning my time to get an extra hour and a bit of sleep and then get my
Yeah,
own
I
good
like
cardio
it,
done at this
mate.
time.
Whoever says men can't multitask was lying. That's what I say. We can multitask. We can multitask just fine. How's things been anyway, buddy, since we last spoke? All right.
Really good.
Yeah,
Busy,
good.
but pretty good.
Yeah, busy is always good. Busy is a good thing, mate. We're privileged to be busy, right?
Yeah, I
Yeah,
prefer
good.
that, the alternative.
Yeah, good, good. Hey, TK. Hi, Chris. How are you, boys? You okay?
Hello, sir.
How are you, my friend? It's been a little while since I've seen your face. How are you, mate?
Last 2 weeks I've had a massive cold and haven't worked out for 2 weeks, but luckily today I was back at the gym, so
Was you? Good. Yeah, I had that a few weeks ago, you know. I don't know what, I think it was more sinus. It literally, I got back from, where was I? I think it was when, not done when I got back from Florida. Literally, it shut me down for a whole week, mate. It's very, well, I've never really had to cancel calls or taken a week off sessions in my whole personal training career in the last 20 years, and it literally shut me down, mate. It was, and it seemed to last for ages. Like it just, it was sinus kind of, I think it might have been a strep infection, you know, but literally knocked me off my feet for 2 weeks. But you're feeling better now?
Back at
Good.
gym today, so all
Good.
good.
Good, good. Hey, Chris, how are you, buddy? I see you driving, mate. How's your day been? All right?
What's up, Dan? Yeah, doing good,
Yeah.
man. Stuck in Orlando traffic, but doing
Ash,
good. It's been a good day.
yeah. Well, of course it's a good day. You've seen me twice today, mate. What can be better than seeing Dan twice in a day, right?
Yeah,
Hey,
you're
Paul,
not
how are
wrong.
you, my
You're not
friend?
wrong.
You okay? You good, mate? How are you, Paul? You good?
Perfectly fine.
Good. Good to see you again, my friend. And Lewis, I'm definitely not going to ask you to come off mute because I know you're not going to be able to. So I'm just going to welcome you. I'm just going to welcome you. Oh, you're off mute. Go on, Lewis.
There we go.
How are you, buddy? Okay.
Doing all right.
Good. Good to see you, my friend. How's things your neck of the woods? All right.
Well, you know, spring has sprung, so you
Spring
know,
is
all good.
sprung. Exactly. It's another day breathing, right, my friend?
Yep.
Good to see you anyway, boys. Anyway, we'll get started. Obviously, give it another couple of, well, I've given it a couple of minutes, see whether people will jump in. So we'll jump straight to it today. So a little bit different to my normal mindset and psychology, missing my slot last week because I was away. I think Gav may have jumped in or Greg may have jumped in, one of the two. So today is going to be more based around training, which is slightly different to what I usually present, but still going to bring my own kind of tinge when it comes to kind of hormones and those sort of things and the sort of stuff I speak about. So today, again, I would say to those of you guys that haven't sat with me before, but I've seen all your faces before, you've all been on my calls, you know the drill. Obviously, I've got a presentation for you guys. If you want to jump in, if there is any questions specifically around the stuff that I'm talking about, or you want any extra elaboration, then please just unmute yourself, kind of jump in and kind of let me know if you have any questions. So today, if I share my screen, give me one second. Right, I think that's up there. Yeah, so kind of training specifically for fat loss. So again, the subheading today was going to be the science of building a lean, strong, high performance body. But those of you guys that have heard me speak before and obviously heard Gav and Greg speak, there's a certain set of principles we look at, and it's kind of multifaceted that it's all interlinked. So there's no one without the other. So what I'm going to try and achieve today in the talk is looking at why most fat loss training plans fail, essentially, not just the plans in regards to the training aspect, but everything surrounding that. What actually drives sustainable fat loss? Kind of one of the most important factors, which I believe is always kind of just looking at weight loss and fat loss and being able to distinguish between the two. So for me, when I'm embarking on a fat loss journey with a client, the first thing I'm thinking about, rather than losing any sort of weight or any sort of fat, is can we preserve the level of muscle mass when getting lean? So it's super important because, again, with the emergence of a lot of your kind of Ozempic and kind of Mounjaro jabs at the moment, you'll have seen a lot of the conflicting information and kind of once all the data starts to come out. You all probably know a load of the guys that are on the GLP-1s, but the main kind of almost kind of limiter to those is lack of muscle mass or losing muscle mass, because people typically jump into higher hypercaloric deficits. And essentially, yes, they lose scale weight, but ultimately they lose a lot of mass as well, which is leading to the discovery of things like osteoporosis and those sort of things. So, kind of one of the most important things about training specifically with fat loss, in my opinion, is definitely preservation of muscle whilst getting lean. And then just looking at, I don't want to broad stroke it, but kind of how elite performers train differently. And those you get, you, every single one of you guys on this call have been with us a long time now. So you can class yourself as elite performers and high performers because you understand the complexities of what we go through and ultimately how we go off a beaten track of just simply putting you in a deficit and essentially kind of thrashing you in a gym. That's an old school method that typically will only work for the genetically elite. And potentially kind of those enhanced individuals that are on any sort of kind of supplementation support or supraphysiological support as well. Because a lot of today you'll hear me talk about kind of recovery. A lot of the stuff that I've spoken about in previous webinars in regards to stress, kind of looking at kind of health, they're all going to be featured today as well. So starting off kind of just you know, I like a subtitle or a broad statement to introduce the topic. So, in my opinion, most men approach fat loss backwards. So, what do we typically do in society? And when you talk to people about losing fat or losing weight, what do they typically do? They'll typically add more cardio, slash calories where they're eating like a rabbit. So, they're eating sub 1,000 calories a day, 1,500 calories a day. They typically do more. So they're in the gym Monday through Sunday training a body part, doing HIIT cardio, doing cardio. They're doing the absolute most in regards to training. So they're training harder. They're sleeping less. So actual quality of sleep and quantity of sleep is typically down, which ultimately leads kind of to their recovery being worse. And then they typically will ask the question, and those of you guys that have people around you that come to you guys for advice now will find that. And they'll wonder why their energy crashes kind of when they're having their bloods done or any sort of kind of testing. Testosterone is chronically low, hunger skyrockets, and typically fat loss stalls. So, and kind of then after a prolonged period, they go back to eating what they perceive as normal. And you guys might have been through this yourself. I've had it with clients previously. They leave me, they go back to, because we've not changed the overall outlook of kind of perception and those sort of things, the weight comes back on. So for me, the goal is typically not to just lose weight. The goal for me, above all else, with any sort of kind of body recomposition or fat loss journey, is always preserve muscle. Okay. It's to improve metabolic flexibility and the ability to kind of utilize the food and the fuel that you're giving the body. Okay. Increase resiliences. So you've heard us talk a lot about now the four resiliences and kind of understanding how those mechanisms work in regards to operational excellence and fat loss. Kind of most importantly, increase that recovery capability. You see at the bottom there, I put doing more work, doing more doesn't work. You must do better. A phrase that you've heard probably me said, it's been bandied about in the industry for a while, but it's not, in my opinion, there's no such thing as overtraining. It's chronic under recovery. And if you're not recovering optimally, then the reality is your body, from a kind of deep kind of physiological and biological emphasis, is not going to do its job. Remember, kind of, you can train and training and nutrition, in my opinion, is external. Obviously, once you ingest the food, it's internal. But looking under the hood of the car and actually understanding what's going in underneath that hood is super important because your body operates with physiology. Okay. And if we're not supporting that and improving that recovery capability to allow that body to burn fuel efficiently, then it's just not going to budge. So you guys might have been there before, and a lot of people that I speak to come in typically having done long periods hypercaloric deficits, and what happens? Things stall because your body is very good at adapting to the environment that it's put in. And remember what I've said in previous webinars, that the the body's number one goal is preservation, right? So if you put it into a hypercaloric deficit for long periods of time, it gets used to not having much energy in the system. To begin with, if you're supporting that, it will use stored fat for fuel. But the more you push the gas pedal, the less fuel that you have in the tank, the less you're feeding it. Ultimately, it's going to stall and start to preserve. So, kind of for me, kind of understanding that the bottom part to that slide of preserving muscle, improving that metabolic flexibility, increasing resilience, recovery capacity is essentially going to create a body that burns that fuel efficiently. And that's got to be the goal. And just knowing that there's quite a few different components to that. So what I typically see, and one of the biggest mistakes, in my opinion, when it comes to fat loss or training for fat losses, is people typically add stress into an already stressed system. So again, going back to what I said at the start, people typically add more cardio, less food, more training volume. And the problem with that is you're actually shrinking your recovery capability, capacity, sorry, while increasing stress demand. And remember, what going back to previous webinars when we've looked at stress is the body, again, is very stressed in general. With so many different, and thinking back to things like allostatic load and the total or overall stress of your body, the body is essentially kind of, and thinking back to the stress bucket analogy, is a lot of people come into the system or try to embark on a fat loss journey with that stress bucket full. And remember, the goal with that stress bucket is not to empty it, is understanding that stress is always going to be kind of part of the system, but it's improving that adaptive capacity of stress and just increasing the size of the bucket. Because if we're not doing that, the result with the more training, less food analogy, or kind of more cardio, internally, cortisol is going to rise. Again, sleep's going to worsen. Natural testosterone is inevitably going to fall at the end of the chain. Muscle loss itself is going to increase. And so when people are simply chasing weight loss, and those of you guys that work with myself or kind of use the tracker, you know that it's got the fat loss model in it, it's got the muscle gain model in there. So there's a reason why we set targets in regards to losing a certain amount of weight a week. Those of you guys at the start of the journey kind of will have seen kind of maybe 3, 4, 5 pounds coming off in those first weeks, but that fat loss soon slows down. And in my opinion, an optimal amount of weight to loss a week, depending on the position you find yourself, if it is a fat loss journey you're embarking on, would be anywhere between 0.8 to 2 pounds a week. What I found is kind of any more than that, and you run the risk of losing a little bit more tissue in that. So we don't want the weight hemorrhaging 3, 4, 5 pounds a week for 16, 17 weeks. Yes, if you're 300 pounds plus, that's fine because you've got a lot more weight to use. But every single one of you guys on this call, I know you personally, I've seen you all in person. So losing 3, 4, 5 pounds a week is not necessary because the chances of that being kind of a little bit more muscle is going to be significantly increased. So muscle loss increases, and ultimately your metabolism is going to slow down. That's typically why aggressive fat loss journeys eventually rebound. So your body kind of gets into such a kind of almost starvation state that when you do start to feed it again and go back to eating perceived normal or drive the calories up to baseline, you typically put on fat a little bit quicker because your body just holds on to everything and essentially doesn't dispel the things that we want it to dispel. So it's understanding that kind of for me, kind of a doing more, eating less analogy just isn't sustainable for short acute periods, yes, but from a long-term approach to fat loss and from a longevity perspective, I just don't think it's all right. It's not sustainable, is kind of what I'm trying to say. So kind of the real goal for me when it comes to fat loss, it's not about burning calories. Okay. So that typical calories in versus calorie out is kind of a, I think, in my opinion, it's more of a kind of blinded approach as opposed to kind of something that kind of is sustainable. So what I think about when it comes to kind of fat loss or how I typify fat loss and what I'm trying to achieve with the guys I work with and what you guys should all be looking to do is improving your mitochondrial efficiency, improving things like insulin sensitivity, again, preserving lean tissue, okay? going even deeper to that with the digestive route is increasing nutrient partitioning and making sure you're assimilating, breaking down, optimally digesting every piece of, well, as much of the food you're eating as possible, improving and kind of increasing that stress resilience. Okay. Because the reality is your body will forever be asking the question in any sort of fat loss phase is, am I safe enough to let go of body fat? Okay. And if sleep is poor, stress is high, things like recovery is typically inadequate, training is excessive, the answer that your body is going to receive back when it sends that messenger is going to be no. It's not a safe environment to let go of body fat. So what's it going to do? It's going to hold on. Those of you guys that track your weight on a daily basis, and my guys see it a lot, is you've had a particularly stressful day, you haven't slept very well. They get on the scales the next morning, the food's been good, but they're highly stressed. They've had a busy day at work, they've had a busy day of travel, but they've not slept well. They've had a not a restful sleep. The weight jumps up. Okay, that's got nothing to do with calories in versus calorie out. That's simply physiologically your body saying, am I safe enough to go through my process? Well, stress markers is driven up. So essentially, kind of cortisol is driving high, and sleep from a deep and REM sleep is down. So it's not in a safe environment to do the processes that are required to allow the body to relinquish body weight or lose fat, essentially. So a couple of things jumping back to kind of on the slide is, again, two statements that I want to make. So calories are one of your greatest levers to recover from stress. So how that works for me is typically when people come into the service or kind of the start, what I typically do with a lot of my guys is get them eating more than they're previously eating, unless that is they're overshooting the calories by a massive amount, which typically nobody comes into the service eating 4,000 calories a day. They don't. The reality is kind of from a quality of food and conducive and non-conducive food, people come in eating bad foods, they're eating high caloric foods, but they're not eating a massive amount of calories. Okay, so allowing your body and giving your body the calorie and the fuel and energy it needs from a nutrition and a kind of macronutrient perspective is super important, because it allows your body to go through those physiological processes, and it's going to allow you to recover from stress in the foundation period. We know, and I see you guys all know, that stress is one of the biggest things within our system, because it's non-judgmental, right? We find stress and the body is naturally always going to be stressed. So calories are going to be one of those greatest levers to recover from stress. And the reality of training and cardio itself, okay, they're simply stress. So although training and cardio is designed to be an acute stressor, which it goes up and comes down, if you're adding training and cardio to an already stressed system, again, it doesn't judge. It just adds more stress to the system. So being able to improve that stress resilience is super important. Going through your parasympathetic practices and everything that I've spoken about previously in respecting the kind of nervous system as a primary goal for each one of you guys. There's not one of you guys on this call that can't tell me that at some point, well, a few of you guys are still early into your day. I know, Rob, you're a little bit further on in regards to timings, but that hasn't had some sort of stress that's gone into the system today. I know I have throughout today. So kind of it's being able to mitigate that stress that's super important. So the real goal is improving mitochondrial efficiency, improving things like insulin sensitivity, preserving that lean tissue, nutrition partitioning, and just most importantly, improving that stress resilience. Okay, so the physiology of fat loss for me is going back to what I said, is it's not just calories in versus calorie out, but energy balance does matter. It does matter, but it's not the sole goal of fat loss. It's not the only thing that kind of affects fat loss as a kind of point. So hormones are already going to kind of determine how your body responds to that deficit. So what are some of the key regulators from a physiology standpoint that are going to be key regulators in that energy balance theory? Things like insulin, okay? Things like cortisol. Just let John in. John's just jumped in. So things like cortisol, things like catecholamines. So those of you guys that don't know what catecholamines are, simply things like dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine. So, which is essentially neurotransmitters produced by the adrenal glands. So it's typically your body's fight or flight response. So they're all categorized as catecholamines. Blood pressure, metabolic energy, thyroid hormones, leptin and ghrelin, which for those of you guys, I haven't really mentioned leptin and ghrelin in many of my talks before, but your hunger and satiety hormones, and then something like testosterone. So on that kind of chart, we've got what, 8, 9, 10 different hormones within that system that are all key regulators when it comes to determining how your body is going to respond to that deficit. So having an understanding and appreciation of those when it comes to your fat loss journey is going to be super important. So it's not just simply calories in, calories in, calories out. We've got to look at the hormonal effects. And we know in a prolonged diet and a really prolonged deficit, on a hypercaloric deficit, kind of we know that leptin and ghrelin are typically going to drop, testosterone will drop, kind of because the system's stressed and effectively starving, cortisol is essentially going to rise. We know that things like dopamine, norepinephrine, kind of which are the excitable genes, potentially will be chasing those dopamine hits from elsewhere. So is it coming from food? Is it coming from other sources? So just understanding and appreciating that hormones have a big role to play in regards to kind of how your body responds to a deficit is super important. So essentially thinking about all those systems and all those hormones, what is it that we want with a fat loss journey? We want stable blood glucose. So those of you guys that have tried continuous glucose monitors, measure your blood sugar. It's important. Obviously, your HbA1c mark on a blood test that many of you have gone through with Greg, which is a 3-month overview of blood glucose, is super important and making sure it stays within range. I was talking to one of my clients yesterday. That's kind of those of you guys that have still seen me know I'm tall, I'm thin, I'm relatively lean year round. A lot of people would kind of assume that my blood sugar is perfect. Because I'm in great, I won't say great shape, that sounds very cocky. I'm in good shape. Okay, I'm tall, I'm lean. Kind of people would intimate that kind of blood sugar is good, but I have a genetic disposition. My dad's side of my family are kind of Caribbean, and we have blood sugar problems on that side of the family. So my HbA1c, I have to monitor regularly simply because it always sits relatively high as normal. It's high normal. Okay, but ultimately, for how I live my life by normal economics, my blood sugar should be good. So there's all these nuances that we have to be looking at when it comes to the physiology of fat loss. So stable blood sugar is one of those. Improving insulin sensitivity and making sure that the receptors within each of the cells are in the right position to be able to take in the breakdown and utilize the glucose effectively when it's going into the system. If you've had previous insulin problems, kind of, and there's going to be permeability of those cells, it's going to be very hard for your cells to uptake and utilize that insulin for fuel. So, and the glucose for fuel. So, it's important that we improve insulin sensitivity. So, it might be in that respect, timing of carbohydrates. And do we put carbohydrates predominantly around the workout? If you are, not as insulin sensitive as we like, because we know that training essentially is going to deplete glycogen, and the best opportunity where your body's starving of glycogen is going to be typically around training when you're exerting energy. So being a little bit more kind of creative with macronutrient timing could be an issue to improve insulin sensitivity. Higher non-exercise activity thermogenesis in regards to NEAT, so higher zone two cardio, again, preserving muscle mass and efficient recovery. So they're going to be the important factors of physiology. Okay, what we don't want, chronic inflammation, elevated cortisol, muscle loss, adaptive thermogenesis, which again is when your body gets into a position where it gets used to having really and relative starvation mode, or kind of gets used to having really low calories and going into preservation mode. Things like low thyroid output are going to be important as well. So essentially, a lot of the research nowadays is consistently showing that the body is typically going to defend against starvation aggressively. Okay, your body doesn't want to starve. It goes into self-preservation. The body is a very clever being that adapts to any situation you put it into it. So it's respecting that. And when kind of it ha that happens, muscle preservation becomes a priority. But if there's no fuel to take from elsewhere, then it's obviously going to take from muscle as well. So muscle for me is always going to be the metabolic engine. Okay, the more muscle you preserve, the easier fat loss becomes, because muscle, if we look at it broad stroke, it's going to improve insulin sensitivity, which is what we want, right? It's going to help store glycogen. It's going to increase your basal or your resting metabolic rate. Okay, it's going to improve glucose disposal as well. And most importantly, in what we're all here for, it supports longevity. So muscle has a high correlation with metabolism. But if you're essentially losing muscle and your metabolism's slowing down year on year, your body simply isn't going to work. And this is why, kind of going back to previous slides, endless cardio can be dangerous. Okay, this is where aggressive deficits are short-sighted in the long term. Having short periods where you go aggressive, I don't think there is a problem, but respecting the hormonal curve around that is going to be super important as well. And having it phasic, where you might have an aggressive diet for 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, but from my findings, and personally, if you want me to put a time frame on it, depending on the individual, my fat loss phases will be anywhere between 8 and 16 weeks for clients from an if I do go aggressive, just simply because from a hormonal perspective, there's going to be implications if we go any longer than that. So as an example, if you've got somebody that's a little bit leaner that wants to lose a little bit of body fat fast, it might be a shorter kind of aggressive diet. But if you've got somebody that has a little bit, has a higher body fat, has a higher weight, obviously more to lose, their body will keep working for that little bit longer because they've got a lot more fat from fuel from fat and a lot more body fat to work with. Okay, so for me, kind of, I've said aggressive deficits are short-sighted, but they have their place in a phasic approach. And for me, well, those of you guys that know me, resistance training must always stay central. If I had my way, kind of all I'd do is resistance train. I'm not a big fan of everything else around that, but ultimately we know how everything else around that is a benefit as well. So the last part of this slide is kind of understanding that cardio alone will always fail. Okay, for me, I see cardio as a tool and not the foundation. You might get people in the interim, and I've had clients that come to me in a really bad, I say a bad state. They're overweight, they're very unfit, they've never trained in a gym before, kind of stress is high, sleep is bad, like just everything is wrong, essentially. Using cardio in its on itself to begin with isn't a bad tool, but people like yourselves are on this call and been in the ecosystem for a long while, kind of it's a tool in a tool belt, not a foundation. Okay, so in effect, too much cardio, believe it or not, will massively increase your recovery demand. It can, because remember, it's an acute stressor. If you're doing hours and hours of cardio, it's still going to be an acute stressor, so it's going to elevate cortisol. Over time, it could lead to muscle wastage, and it's going to impair your ability to retain the quality muscle that you have or you're building. It's going to increase hunger, okay? Because the more expenditure you elicit, the hungrier the system's going to get. And what I've found with endless bouts of cardio as well is this is more of a observation from my coaching experience rather than anything that I've read or I've studied. Is I've often seen that when people do high amounts of cardio, it often reduces things like spontaneous movement later on in their day. Because when they've done the cardio, and I don't understand, kind of, I go to those of you guys that know I train first thing in the morning, and I see so many people just walking on a treadmill. And I don't understand it because I'm like, do steps or get outside, get some sunlight, et cetera. But so many people walk on a treadmill. And I just think that kind of cardio or zone two should be done on a different apparatus, personally, that requires different stimulus. You can get steps elsewhere. And I have my beliefs around steps just because obviously I believe anything above 12, unless it is your daily activity of steps. I know I've got some clients that do 14, 15, they're working manual jobs, they're on the feet all day. That's different. But forcing yourself, if you're a sedentary individual, to do any more than 10,000 steps, I think is a waste, because ultimately, kind of, I've worked it out that For me, doing around 1,000 steps, and it takes anywhere between 10 and 12 minutes, depending on how the fast a dog wants to walk. Okay, so if we then times that by 10, if I'm actively trying to do 10,000 steps consciously, times that by 10 minutes, that works out an hour and 40 minutes a day I'm having to find in my day to walk. So kind of getting your steps up from a current baseline is important, but also understanding that there's better ways to elicit the response required for fat loss, and doing steady state cardio, zone two, and all those sort of things is less time consuming and will elicit the same response. Because ultimately, the more time you spend actively walking, in my opinion, it's remember it's a stressor. So it's an acute stressor that's just compounding. So adding a few thousand onto your average step count and being purposely active and trying to hit 10,000 steps roughly, and then using the rest from zone two is would be a strategy that I use just from a time efficiency standpoint as well. Because the reality is the body adapts. As I've said, it's a smart being, so your body's typically going to adapt quite quickly to repetitive aerobic output. So you have to change the stimulus. That's why using zone two should be a tool as opposed to a staple, because your body is going to kind of understand and adapt very quickly to kind of 10,000 steps. So we have to add extra stimulus into the system to keep everything moving forward. And so nobody wants to be in a position where over time that your body's burning fewer calories doing the same work, because that's essentially what's going to happen as your body starts to get used to it. So hours of cardio is typically going to stop working. Your metabolism may and can downregulate, and that's where typically your fat loss plateaus happen, which makes it a little bit harder, and you get those stalls where you just can't get past the perceived weight and those sort of things. So just kind of mixing it up and talking about that into the next slide kind of is going to be important. So for me, I was going to title the top part of this slide as the best training split for fat loss. Okay, I don't, you've heard me speak on program design before. There is no best program. Every single one of you on this call, there's a best program, but it's most importantly what's specific to you individually. There is no one best size fits one fits all program. If we look at biomechanics, structure, injuries, kind of previous sporting activity, all those sort of, there's so many different factors that go into the best training split. There's what's a best training split for you. But what I've tried to do with this slide is categorize a few tidbits that I think are important to include as you kind of build and essentially the preferred training split for fat loss. So starting with the foundations, as you guys know, our standard 3 to 5 resistance sessions a week. Okay, so the 3 to 5 will be dependent on a few different things. So time, kind of availability, recovery, sleep, all those sort of factors. So for me, kind of, you can get just people always think that they have to train 5 times a week, but your body and your ecosystem is going to determine whether you can recover from that. And I've seen just as good results people training 3 times a week as 5 times a week. If I had my own way, I'd train 7 days a week, but obviously recovery dictates and governs what how much I train. So I reluctantly cap it at 5. So I think falling between kind of at 3 to 5 resistance sessions a week is optimal. Our focus is on both kind of skill acquisition and force output exercises. So for those of you guys that haven't heard it before, how we typically categorize exercise into two camps: skill acquisition, force output. Skill acquisition are exercises that require internal stability, so more your compound-based exercises, anything that uses a barbell and a dumbbell that requires you to internally stabilize before moving the weight at hand. And then we've got force output. That's where there's external stability. So that might be resistance machines, kind of some cable machines and things like Smith machines, because you've got external stability. You still require a little bit of bracing and internal stability, but the machine pretty much puts you into a environmentally or an externally safe position. So for me, kind of having a nice mix of kind of compound movements, which are going to be your kind of skill acquisition and force output exercises, are going to be super important. Mechanical tension is a big one. a lot of you guys on this call have been to our muscle camps and the emphasis on training muscles on movement over movements. And you've heard me say that before is super important. So many people focus on just solely getting stronger and lifting weights, but the focus on mechanical tension from a fat loss perspective specifically is super important, because if we can put the specific target tissue under as much tension as possible, it's going to improve all the things related to building tissue, which ultimately is going to lead to greater fat loss. Okay, progressive overload and getting stronger, it's all linked to fat loss. So again, making sure you're using Everfit or any modality that you use to continue getting stronger depending on which phase you're in. The biggest and the most simple dictator of am I putting on muscle, which again will put you into a metabolically preferred position, is getting stronger. But then respecting the fact that it's mechanical tension before progressive overload and making sure the muscle's doing the work and we're not just focusing on movements. And then ultimately, kind of the recovery capacity. So, kind of from a tr in regards to a training variable standpoint, and the preferred for me is I like kind of, and again, we can look at your genetics for this, but you'll find some of you guys are slow twitch, which you prefer the kind of a higher rep stuff and a shorter recovery. Me personally, I'm predominantly fast twitch, so I need prefer, and I all often train with lower reps, kind of higher rest, because I haven't got the ability to clear lactic acid as well as some individuals, because being quite sport-based, I'm quite fast twitch. But I think in regards to variables when it comes to training, opt for moderate volume, and moderate intensity, and then obviously controlled rest periods. But going back off your genetics, you'll be able to, and those of you guys that have been through your genetics with Greg and those of you that have trained for a while, you'll typically know which sort of model you're geared towards, which is going to be important. And using those genetics to kind of train in the way that your body requires. Don't get me wrong, being fast twitch, I still do higher rep sets, shorter rest. I still want to train that component, but a large majority of my training is to train where my kind of genetics sit. So it's lower rep, higher rest, but then throwing in, I'm a bit of a volume junkie and I've always trained that. So having a little bit of the stuff that I don't kind of get on with as much is super important, but moderating that with recovery as well. Okay. Range of movement is important. Those of you guys that are on the camp, kind of understanding taking the muscle through its full contractile range is going to be super important. So are you training a muscle through its full extremity ranges from a lengthened position all the way through to a shortened position? Remember, not just with one exercise, but exercises that work great. And quality of movement is going to be important. So it's essentially the goal of this is to signal the body that this muscle that we're creating is necessary. Okay. Your body will always sacrifice fat before muscle when things like protein are adequate, strength is maintained, and recovery is supported. So understand that your body in the right environment will always preference getting rid of fat before muscles, but it's allowing and making sure that you put your body into that kind of position so it can send the right signals. Okay. The next part is kind of the neat in regards to it being the most underrated fat loss variable. Okay, so what does non-exercise activity thermogenesis include? Walking, standing, fidgeting, daily movement. Okay, so people underestimate how important this can be, because on a daily basis, it can lead to us getting rid of hundreds to thousands of calories a day. So I talk a lot to my guys, obviously being predominantly sat behind my laptop far too many hours a day. If I ever take a phone call, if my neighbor's looking, they must think I'm a weirdo because I'm on my phone and I'm walking up and down the stairs in my bedroom, back downstairs, back through the living room, out through the garden, the dog's behind me. But I actively try to create as many steps as possible. And I can get through 3,000, 4,000 steps just at home on the phone when I'm doing things, because predominantly people sit, those of you guys that have sedentary jobs, using your 10-minute breaks. It sounds silly, but going to the toilet a little bit more often, even if you don't need the toilet, just to kind of keep everything turning over. Because fidgeting, standing, walking, kind of these sort of things can account for a lot of calories and are super important. I've often found that the leanest people that I encounter and work with, they move more unconsciously. So kind of they're constantly moving. You know those people that just don't stop, they just don't sit still. They move more unconsciously, they sit less, they walk more, they recover better. Okay. So kind of being trying to make them conscious where you have little things or what you're doing. Typically, again, my air fryer is on, or I'm waiting for something to happen, or I'm doing something around the house. I'm walking around while I'm doing it, and it's hard to get into it, but once you get into it, it becomes unconscious. So just thinking about areas within your daily structure that you might be able to add some extra steps in, because it will account for, again, a lot more calories being burned, which ultimately is going to help kind of move everything through. Okay, so recommendations for the for neat, as I've said to you, I prefer the kind of 8 to 12,000 steps a day mark. Okay, what I'm big on, if it's available to you, what I like to do is kind of post-meal walks. One, it adds steps, but two, it helps kind of digestion, which obviously Greg will have told you that kind of walking for 5 to 10 minutes after a meal is going to help move everything through that digestive system a little bit better. Morning walks are kind of a great kind of simply because movement in general is often going to help glucose disposal. It can help regulate circadian rhythm. Okay. Most importantly, recovery, but also stress management. Like walking is such an underutilized tool where you have time. And as I've said to you, making sure you're conscious, it'll be conscious to begin with, but turning it unconscious eventually is going to be super important. And kind of the caveat to that is just making sure that kind of you're as active as possible, because so many of you guys listening to this that are on the call live quite sedentary lives in regards to around work and those sort of things. So it's where can you add an extra 5 to 10 minutes in somewhere? And then the last part of this slide is high intensity interval training and where it fits. Okay. I'm a big believer that HIIT can be powerful, but it can be expensive. Okay. It can be expensive. So hear me out. So the benefits, obviously, for HIIT is unrivaled. Mitochondrial adaptations, VO2, those of you guys that do the mass intervals or have done the mass test, VO2 max improvements, time efficiency, which I mentioned earlier on, insulin sensitivity. So there's a raft of benefits to HIIT. So what are the costs? Because it's so high intensity, it can lead to central nervous system fatigue. It increases recovery demand. Okay. It could potentially, depending on how stressed you are, elevate cortisol. And ultimately, depending on what sort of HIIT training you're doing, it can increase injury risk. So I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. Not everybody can run. You ever driving past the runners, and it's obviously getting warmer everywhere now, and everybody's running right, and you just see those runners where you look at them and just kind of put your hands over your face because they look terrible running. That's an injury risk to me. So not everybody, teaching somebody how to run is super important for those that don't run. So kind of the type of HIIT training, it can, because it's so explosive as well, and kind of muscles, if not utilized correctly, can kind of go very quickly if they're not used very often, it increases injury risk. Okay, so in regards to HIIT, I'm not against it. There's so many pros, but it's also being aware of the cons. So I'd use sparingly. So for me, it will always be with clients and myself, 1 to 2 sessions a week max. Okay, very short duration, depending on what part of a system that you're trying to work on. Place it strategically. So we're not placing it in with a heavy leg day. For instance, someone's doing sprints, actual running sprints, you'd never place it at the end of leg day. So be strategic where you place it. Okay. And don't see it as daily suffering sessions. I've had clients that come in that are training resistantly, doing HIIT, and then doing cardio. Again, the overload to that system and the actual CNS demand there is significantly high. And again, typically, these individuals are stressed. And why aren't I losing weight? Because the demand is so high. So, for me, going back to what I said at the start, HIIT is powerful, but can also be expensive. You essentially use it wisely. So, going back to what I've said quite a lot through the talk already, recovery determines results. Okay. You don't get lean from training, you get a lean from adapting to training. Okay. So, poor recovery Again, if we look at the caveat and kind of what poor recovery leads to internally a little bit more, water retention, elevated cortisol, reduced testosterone, increased cravings, reduced insulin sensitivity. So understanding that kind of all the same things are happening, so putting in place and a massive emphasis on recovery is super important. Okay, so poor sleep impacts fat gain, cravings, low testosterone. It can ramp up inflammation. It can kind of bring in brain fog. So understanding kind of the difference and how kind of the recovery equation is important. And you've heard me speak so much about sleep in it. I think in every bloody talk that I've done, I've spoke about sleep because we know the benefits of things like deep sleep. It's going to improve insulin sensitivity, which can be jacked up. It improves report recovery performance and can reduce everything from an inflammatory perspective. So improving the deep sleep, and for those of you guys that are on the call today that haven't been on before, is an ideal for sleep. So I can give you a structure. If you're measuring your sleep, for me, it's quantity over it's quality over quantity. And depending on how many hours, ideally 6 to 8 hours, you want to be asleep. But of those 6 hours, what we're looking for, if you are tracking the data, remember 10% and less we want to spend awake. Okay, typically 40 to 50% of the time, that time we want in a light sleep, and then 20 to 25% of deep and REM sleep. So really looking at kind of operationalizing those and making sure that they're in as a cofactor, because sleep's going to be super important in regards to kind of making sure that you're recovering optimally, which again physiologically puts your body into a position where it's a green light to lose fat. Because if it's not there, you won't lose fat. It will get stubborn and it will stop and it will maintain. Okay. So sleep and fat loss. I've always said sleep is a fat loss multiplier. So just looking at the caveats to sleep, kind of from a, let's say from a negative standpoint, sleep deprivation, going back to what we said in regards to the hunger and the satiety hormones, it's going to increase ghrelin, okay, and it's going to reduce leptin. And again, with those being your hunger and satiety hormones, if ghrelin's increased, you're going to be craving more, okay? So just understanding the internal effect it has. Again, sleep deprivation can increase insulin resistance, it can increase hunger, it's going to reduce training output and operational excellence throughout the day. Okay, so in regards to your practical sleep priorities, which you guys have heard me speak about before, get a consistent sleep wake time. Okay, morning sunlight's going to be super important. Making sure that you're sleeping and if you've got blackout blinds, great, but making that room as dark as possible, making sure the temperature's correct within the room. Okay. The sleep hygiene that we spoke about previously, reducing that blue light at night. Okay. So for me, kind of light, temperature, food, exercise, and stress are all going to be huge kind of sleep regulators. So kind of just making sure that you're curating your perfect bedroom when it comes to sleep and understanding the importance of sleep is going to be super important. And the same applies to stress. So stress can check, rather than stress being a fat loss multiplier, stress changes fuel allocation. We know already that chronic stress is going to raise cortisol. It's going to impair recovery. It's going to increase predominantly abdominal fat storage. So those of you guys, and I've got a couple of clients that they're like, oh my God, around the belly button, this is just the last place to go. I often say to my guys, it's often the hardest and the last place to go when somebody's getting lean. It will be the very last point of where you're, some people carry it lower back, but predominantly it'll kind of be around this abdominal area. Okay. Because essentially kind of when you're stressed and cortisol is raised, it'll typically be held in and around this belly button. So again, high stress situations and more fat loss resistance is going to increase abdominal fat storage or impair reduction of that abdominal fat storage. It can reduce testosterone and ultimately ramps up inflammation. So you're hearing a lot of commonalities here with sleep, stress, and kind of what we've said already previously. So kind of for me, kind of it's trying to avoid chronically elevated cortisol. Acute Acutely elevated cortisol isn't an issue, but chronically is going to lead to things like fat gain or kind of inability to lose fat, low testosterone, insulin resistance, and most importantly, deteriorating health. So what sort of things can we do kind of to help mitigate these? Again, simple things that we spoke about before from a parasympathetic dominant standpoint, things like meditation, things like breath work, walking and breathing. Recovery days are super important. And what I describe with my guys as parasympathetic days, regulating that nervous system and rebalancing the sympathetic to parasympathetic dominance, they are all individually fat loss tools. So again, getting people to do meditation, breath work, and mobility is always difficult. It's always a sticking point with my new clients. I've got it with a couple of new clients at the moment. But if we add an extra, if I tell you, if you meditate more, if you do more breath work, if you kind of do more kind of calming down or parasympathetic, you're going to lose more fat, and fat loss is your goal. You're going to snap my hand off. So if you reframe the things that you don't like doing and add them to being part of your goal and adding more of a significant meaning to them, then ultimately kind of they're going to essentially be done more, and you're going to do them because there's an extra layer of complexity added to them, which ultimately are going to give you more of a buy-in, sorry. So putting this all together now, kind of finishing off with the slides in regards to kind of, well, I've called it the fat loss hierarchy. Okay. And for me, this is kind of, if I wanted to put it into an order, there's a few interchangeable and it's individually specific. This is more a generic version for you guys personally, depending on what we work on. We might go a different way around. But if I wanted to put it into a hierarchy, this is the order that I'd go. So I'd start with nutrition adherence, again, and fueling the system, which is super important. Then moving into sleep quality, kind of duration, and quantity. Resistance training always features high on the list for me because I think it's important because of the raft of benefits it has. Daily movement, stress management, cardio or conditioning, so your HIIT, and then supplements. So again, those of you guys that kind of have heard me speak before is supplements are supplements. They're there to supplement everything else you're doing. That's why they last on the list. It's same with the emergence and those of you guys that are on peptides and those sort of things. You've got to be doing the right things for them to have the correct response. And it's the same with conditioning as cardio. It's a tool belt because you can get 10, 15, 20 pounds off your body without doing any element of cardio just by sticking to nutrition, sleeping better, and de-stressing and doing a bit of resistance training. You can get 15 to 20 pounds off your body by eating well, de-stressing, and sleeping better without any resistance training. So they're all great additions. So that's the reason why I've gone this way. I put resistance training a little bit higher just because, again, from a preservation of muscle being a primary goal of fat loss, that's why it goes so a little bit higher up on the list. And then just moving into kind of the elite fat loss framework and just a few kind of key things that I think that high performers actually do. And as I said to you right at the start, each one of you guys on the call, I know you all personally and you're all high performers. So hopefully you can agree that you guys are all doing this. So it's training hard enough and not endlessly and making every rep, every session, every set count. Okay. You're aggressively protecting recovery. Okay, they build muscle while they're losing fat, and the focus is on strength. The focus is on kind of preserving everything they've got and building. Okay, they're walking daily in regards to kind of an expenditure standpoint, and they've got a step count. And again, walking daily isn't right doing 12,000 steps, it's what's specific to yourself individually and adding a couple onto those. Consistently, I've got a good sleep hygiene routine. Barring the kids, I know there's a few guys that listen to these have kind of got young children. That's the caveat to this, but they do their best. They set regular timings and they sleep efficiently and they've got a great sleep hygiene routine. They try to manage stress and mitigate stress and improve the size of that stress bucket. Okay. And most importantly for me is they track trends. Like the big thing for me with my guys is tracking. I'm a bit OCD with the data. Chris will be able to back me up on this. I'm forever messaging him. Get your tracker filled in, get your tracker filled in because data doesn't lie. So for me, knowing that every day mentally and emotionally is going to be different. There's going to be good days, you're going to be bad days, you're going to be feeling like you can run for a brick wall one day, you're going to feel like shit another day, and you can't be asked to do anything. So for me, the most important thing that kind of high performers typically do is they track trends and not emotions. They build and curate that 16-hour audit. And whether they feel good or they feel shit, they stick to it. They do the hard shit when they don't want to. And that's super important. And each one of you guys do that, and you've seen the benefits. Often the best sessions are the ones that you don't feel like doing, or something's crept into the system to try and kind of disrupt the cycle. So kind of just understanding that hopefully a lot of you guys on this call are doing that. But kind of for those of you guys listening, it just starts to, hopefully it's starting to give you a blueprint for success if you're not already doing this. So from I like to kind of give you guys some immediate implementation action steps. So just going back and kind of recapping everything from a training perspective, 3 to 5 resistance sessions a week, 8 to 12,000 steps a day, potentially 1 to 2 conditioning sessions, depending on how many resistance sessions you're in, and getting some NEAT in. From a recovery perspective, anywhere between 6 to 9 hours sleep would be optimal. Morning sunlight, protein at every meal from a macronutrient standpoint, reduce alcohol as much as possible and kind of abstain from alcohol if possible. And then from a monitoring perspective, what we're looking to track in an ideal world is most of you guys will track waist circumference, but improving that strength, and that's where your EverFit comes in, and making sure each session you're tracking and there's an increase in volume and tonnage across a session, not in every exercise, because that's going to be impossible, but just making sure every single session there's a progression in tonnage when you get the tonnage at the end in your EverFit. Things like heart rate variability is going to be a great thing to track. Your sleep quality in the different levels of sleep and kind of where you're spending time in zones, energy, and a nice one that I like that's very easy to measure is things like resting heart rate, but also things like blood pressure. They're going to be important markers of health, because if your systems are in a good position, it's a green light to go. And essentially, your body's going to be in a great position to kind of lose the body fat that you want to. So just closing this, essentially, everybody listening to this, what you don't need: more suffering, more cardio, more restriction. As I've always says in most of my talks, what we need is we need a better strategy, better recovery, better physiology, and better consistency. So the question is always not how hard you can push, because if we get green light to go, kind of a lot of us within this room will do what's necessary. But the question that I want you to always ask yourself is, how long can you sustain excellence? Okay. For me, successful physiques and fat loss journeys that kind of achieve results and stay, they're not achieved in 30 days. Okay. They're achieved over a longer period, but they're able to be sustained for life because the principles, the routines, the structures are always inbuilt. So for me, kind of, anybody can go into a session and bury themselves, but that's not smart. It's kind of consistently being able to kind of go as hard as you physically can and keep improving that for as long as you can. And that's how a successful physique's going to be built. And ultimately, understanding the physiology around and the recovery markers around your own specific body is going to be important to just be able to, if fat loss is your goal, keep moving towards fat loss until you're at the position that you want to be, and then ultimately kind of stay there for the rest of your life. So that's all I've got today, guys. So I'll stop sharing. Is there, as always, is there any questions? Kind of, has anybody got any kind of comments in regards to kind of anything that they're struggling with, anything within the slides that they want a little bit more information with, or kind of ultimately any questions?
I can chime in if that's all
Okay.
right.
Chris,
Great. Hey, I've been trying to get 12,000 steps in a day and just stay mobile because I'm sitting a lot in the day. So just trying to get that in. I've when you say long-term cardio like that, and that your body will adapt kind of thing, right? And plateau per se, about how long is that still a lifelong thing? Is just to keep up with those kind of steps? Or when you say cardio, what are you referring to as far as when you'll start plateauing, or what does that look like?
So for me, just a quick question on regards to your steps, kind of 12,000 you're trying to do, Jake. If you didn't like have to do 12, how many would you typically do in a day? Like you
In a
say you're quite.
day, around 6,000 in a day.
So you're adding essentially how I'd see that is you're adding an extra 60 minutes of expenditure on with
That's
your
right.
extra
That's
60 minute steps, right? So
right.
for me,
And
from
it depends on my activity on the weekends, you know, that kind of thing too. But in a daily work day,
Yeah, so for
so I'm trying to
me,
get, go ahead.
I think kind of sustainability for long period is your body will adapt to doing 12,000 steps eventually. So I would be uncomfortable you then saying, right, because it's adapted, I would have to do 14, 15, 16, because again, more tasks added. So ultimately, how I'd reframe that is I'd probably bring it down to 10,000 steps or 10 to 12,000 steps. And then potentially put some low intensity cardio in there as well, where you can moderate your heart rate a little bit more and push that little bit harder in that shorter space of time. Because the reality is kind of the progression is steps and essentially kind of steps to LISS, which is low intensity steady state cardio. Then you've got your high intensity or your HIIT training. And kind of having a nice blend of not spending too much time walking, because I just believe on a fat loss journey, people can get more bang for their buck if they split the difference. So they stick to eight. Personally, I like 10,000 steps. 10,000 steps, agreed amount of cardio. So maybe 60 minutes cardio across a week from a low intensity steady state perspective. And then if you're training five times, I may put one HIIT session in there. But if you're only training three to four times, you might put one or two high intensity or
Hits in
HIIT
there.
training sessions in there. So having a nice blend, because a good thing about having a nice blend, Jake, is it keeps your body guessing. And as I said about your body getting used to it, because you've got a nice blend of all three, your body never quite gets used to everything, and you're always kind of almost changing the page on the body, so it just keeps it guessing. And ultimately, with those three modalities, your kind of VO2 max is going to be improving. So you're going to be getting fitter. So ultimately, with your HIIT training and with your low intensity steady state, because you're getting fitter, you're able to push harder. So effectively, over long periods of time, you're working harder for the at the same time. So you might take the level up on a rower or a kind of elliptical or the bike. You once you get comfortable doing 15 minutes at level five, you might move it to level six. So energy expenditure is increasing because you're pushing it harder. And that's the same with high intensity. If you're doing intervals, you get fitter, which means you move the continuum forward. So you are actually progressing in that rather than with steps. You're not going to focus on walking faster for 12,000 steps, if that makes sense. So there's not really a progressive model with steps, but there is for the other two.
What I'm finding now is what I'm finding is that I'd have to increase my incline because I wasn't getting enough. The heart rate, they're wanting it at, well, my coach is, I'm with Mike, Coach Mike. He's wanting it at 125 to 135. And I'm pushing to try and get that anymore. Like, I can hardly get that anymore unless I just start running a little bit.
No, 100%. That's
Which
yeah,
is great.
that's
That's a
getting
great
fitter.
problem. That's a great problem. But it's definitely, so at the low intensity, like you're saying, what is there a target height rate you're looking for on the low intensity?
That's again individually specific, but I like to sit between the 120, 140 mark as a broad stroke. So 120 to 140 beats per minute is usually fine. If your goal was and you was hitting 120 to 125 when walking, that's obviously going to reduce to around about 110 to 115 now. So I'd probably err on the side of probably 125 to 130 to start, and keep your heart rate there. And then again, from that position, I like the 120 to 140 model personally. So sitting right in the middle for that for you to start with, Jake, would be a great start, bud.
I do have one hit in there a week, but I do resistance four times a week, so I definitely could throw in maybe two hit in there. It might be good just to mix it up a
And
bit.
all it mean, like I say, the only contraindication to doing two, if you're doing four sessions a week, is are you recovering optimally, and are all your markers from a HRV.
I gotcha.
If they're online, mate, push it on. If you're finding your recovery is impaired slightly, I'd hold off
Fair,
and just do
fair,
one.
fair.
Because again, we don't want to throw too much into the system. If we throw lifts in there and an extra HIIT cardio, that's going to add a bit more stress in the system. So I have no problems with adding those things in as long as you're able to recover from them, buddy.
Okay. Yep. Got it. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Does
Thanks.
that
Thanks.
answer your question okay?
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect. I'll let
Yeah.
someone else chime in.
Yeah, no worries, buddy. So TK, tips for a skinny fat waist size creeping up. Mate, you've got to embrace that. I was actually having this conversation with Filippo the other day. Like, we're not far away from 100 kilos now. And if Filippo will listen back to this, so I hope you listen to this, Filippo. And the conversation we have every week is, I'm getting fat. Like, psychology wise, it's a mind fuck. Pardon my French, guys. I am British. I do like a swear word. So unfortunately, when you're kind of putting on muscle, buddy, you've got to embrace the belly, unfortunately. Again, tips to mitigate it, and I know Gavel have this in play anyway, is I find what helps keeping my guys a little bit leaner when they are kind of trying to put on quality tissue and resisting the urge of getting fat, especially for somebody like yourself. And what helps with me is adding high intensity in, because I, again, for me, and I like running. I don't know whether you run, but using something that kind of uses both arms and legs, I've always found keeps me relatively, and most of my guys relatively lean when building. It's just making sure that that doesn't negate. And because I know you have to eat a lot of food to put on tissue, HIIT may negate the goal of putting on tissue. So it's finding that happy medium. But a tip to kind of keep the belly down when building for somebody like yourself, I'd say something like HIIT would be a good thing to add in. Obviously, it's going to help improve and keep that heart healthy as well. But again, it's one of those where it's diminishing returns, isn't it? It's what do we want more? If it's muscle and we're just on a muscle building phase, you just got to suck it up, bud. Embrace the summer belly, little tiny belly, which again is never as bad as you think it is. By the way, I was saying this to Filippo, it's never as bad as you think it is. So yeah, I'd say HIIT would be the best thing from a. But we're not trying to lose fat at the moment. You're trying to gain muscle, buddy. Okay. Right, boys, as always, and those of you guys that are going to be listening to this call, I hope you find value. Any questions, as always, drop me a message. But I hope you've found it all useful. Always a pleasure speaking to you guys. Thank you for taking your time out of your day to listen to me waffle on. Any questions, give me a shout. Always good to see you, boys, and I look forward to speaking to you later on. Take care, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan.
Bye bye.
Cheers.
Take care, boys. Bye bye.